It is a beautiful day, and I'm very thankful for us to be able to gather here and to worship and to fellowship. Thank you very much for coming. We're not able to live stream this today, so thank you for those later on who were able to tune in and watch us. I'm going to ask a question. What is your favorite Bible verse? Can everybody answer it once? What's your favorite Bible verse? Psalm 25.
This is the day the Lord has made.
John 3:16. This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Others?
1 John 1:9.
Then life knows art.
Let me ask this. What's your favorite book of the Bible?
Oh, God.
Ecclesiastes.
What's that?
Ecclesiastes.
Very good.
You have
our
favorite book in
the Bible? Ezekiel. Good one.
James.
We'll get back to that in just a second. I was at a clergy conference a few years ago, and someone asked that question. And of course, all these clergy people had to respond, "Well, I like Romans the best," or not. You know, the Gospel of John is my favorite. Someone in the back corner said, "I like Job," and everyone turned around and was like, "Are you okay? We need to talk." For me, my favorite book of the Bible is the book of James, the epistle of James. James, if you don't know, this James that we're talking about is not the James that we read about, the son of Zebedee, in the gospel. This is James, the brother of Jesus. James the Just, he is sometimes called. And this particular individual was known to be a tremendous preacher. He was so good at his preaching, it actually enraged some of the people in Jerusalem. And they took him to the top of the temple and threw him off. And some say a miracle. It sounds like not good. He survived the fall, and then they beat him to death. I think that James's letter is one of those things that is unique in the Bible. It's a kind of wisdom literature. It's telling us how to practically apply our faith. And I think that the reason that James is writing this is because he has a very unique connection with Jesus. Having grown up with Jesus, having known Jesus in a way that none of the other disciples really could have, I think that James was very concerned not only with Jesus' legacy, but how people understood what all of this meant. James was writing to say it actually matters that you change your life, that you live like any of this has ever even mattered. In the book of James, you have so many wonderful examples of what it means to live a Christian life. And I want you to realize that at no point in the book of James does he say it means that you're going to show up in church in your Sunday best. It doesn't say that you are required to have very polite language and say please, sir, thank you, and all of those. It doesn't say that you're required to stop drinking and smoking and gambling and all that stuff. Maybe you should. Don't get me wrong. But James is concerned about how we as Christians treat other people, how we interact with other people. James' concern is that we actually love people, not just say that we do, not just preach that they're saved and then go on, but actually, tangibly, reach out to the people in our society in this very broken and hurting world. And in the lesson that we have today, James is talking about what is true religion. True religion is this: to go out and help the widows and the orphans. Now, who were the widows and the orphans of his day? I mean, they literally were, right? But they were those who were marginalized, cast down in society. Those people for whom they had no protectors. No one was out to care for them. Many of these women who were widows would wind up completely destitute if her husband hadn't been able to provide fully for her. Orphans had virtually no voice in society. Many of them were going to wind up out on the street. Many of them would wind up as slaves. Many would wind up selling themselves to help the widows and the orphans, those who have been marginalized by society, those who have been cast down. Those are who we are to raise up. Those are who we are to care for. My brothers and sisters, we have widows and orphans in our own time. We have those people that are on the margins of our society, those for whom it is our Christian duty to take care of, because that's our religion. Our religion isn't something that is theoretical or philosophical. It is, in fact, something completely tangible. It is a lived faith and a lived experience. So who are those that are out there in our society that are marginalized? Who are those that are cast down that we must raise up? We have a lot, and we could make quite the list. Our society still puts down women. They still put down those from minority groups. We still put down those for whom their biggest sin may be that they love someone differently than you. We have so many people who are down and out, those for whom society has written off. Maybe they have a drug problem. Maybe they have some other form of addiction. Maybe their lifestyle just isn't quite like yours. God doesn't care how many Bible verses you've memorized. God doesn't care what your favorite Bible verse is. God doesn't care about any of that. God cares about how you treat people. Because if you aren't actually reading the Bible to apply it to your life, there is utterly no point in reading the Bible. The Bible, of course, is in the Guinness Book of World Records as the most popular book of all time. And I think to myself, what an amazing world we would live in if all of these people who went out and bought a Bible through time had actually ever lived like they opened the pages. How different this world would be. How amazing we could live with each other and in each other and through each other for this broken and hurting world. Now, there's this guy in the 20th century. His name was Albert Schweitzer. Has anyone ever heard of Schweitzer? Okay. Really cool guy. One of those people way too smart, right? So he was a preacher's kid, and he went to seminary and got a seminary degree, and then he got a PhD in philosophy. Then he got a music degree and was one of the world's foremost experts on Bach. Was a concert organist, as a matter of fact. And if that wasn't enough, he decided that he was bored and he went to medical school and became a medical doctor. Obviously not playing on the same level that I am. Okay? Schweitzer had all of this stuff going for him. And he was really making a lot of money, and he was providing for his family, had a great, beautiful home that you can go visit in Alsace-Lorraine in France. And he decided that that really wasn't working for him. So he left it all behind and opened a hospital in French Equatorial Africa, what is now Gabon. And he was interviewed by the BBC. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He spoke around the world against nuclear proliferation. He did all of these things. But he always came back to this little hospital that he had founded. And the BBC interviewed him, and they said, why did you leave Europe and all the comforts and all that you had there to come down here and spend most of your life out in the sticks of Africa? And you know what his response was? He said, it's about my faith. I wanted to make my life my argument. I wanted to make my life my argument. Schweitzer lived this extraordinary life for the glory of God, actually changing what it was that he was doing and how he was doing it to go out and do something.
You've got mail.
For the betterment of those who had been cast down. I'm not calling on all of us to go found a hospital in Africa, okay? I'm calling on all of us to actually love people, which is hard to do. I'm calling on us to try. I'm calling on us to actually act like the Bible matters in our lives. I'm calling on us all to care for the widows and the orphans of our time and in this place. Wherever you may find us, wherever you may be, please, please, make your life your argument for your faith.